This is tape 5 of Dora Freilich's story, and this is Helen Grossman doing the interviewing, and she is at Feldafing. And go ahead, Dora.
Feldafing is a displaced person camp, DP. It is run like a little city.
With a little government,
it's schools, which we need. We have to be attached to something. But
somebody to...
Right.
To get your life back.
To get our life together. Although we do not know about psychology. But we have meetings and we talk about it. And... a sponsoring is in the marriage. This is 1946.
Till 1949, until we left
to immigrate
to the United States.
Organization of
chicken on the market and all kinds of cucumbers. My husband and my brother-in-law opened up a little shop and made shoes.
In Feldafing.
Some tailors. You know, you started to get your life back on the road again. And we had meetings, we had dances, to which we went. As, I don't know, it's not fun, it's not cruel, it's just, I guess...
But you have to live.
Yeah, unless you commit suicide, you must go on living. And you wanted to live. Somehow, the power, the willpower to go on living was so strong, you felt like you are the only survivor of a family and that you must carry the whole... In honor of your family, you go on living. It was not easy. It was not easy. But with everybody being in the same boat, it was easier. However, each and every one of us went through his own little
thing. Your own hell.
Hell. So somehow we all tried together to help each other. And we stayed there. And one day, this policeman got killed at the station in Feldafing when the train arrived or the train was departing. I really don't remember exactly what it was. But a Jewish policeman to be killed in Germany after the war.
By
a German.
A civilian or another policeman? Or a soldier?
I don't think that they ever found out who killed him. the demonstrations that we had. We had marched into the city as civilized people with banners. We had a funeral for him, for the whole camp attended. I call it camp again, but it was a displaced person camp, right. And we all marched, and this is the march. We all marched, we wore white blouses, black ties.
Black skirts.
This is my girlfriend, mm-hmm. who lives in Miami now. She's alive. I see her occasionally when we go there. I'm there behind there carrying a banner. It's very hot.
Oh, you had a banner.
A flag. We were all carrying.
Oh, my.
There, in there, this is me.
Would you call this a magazine or a program? Dora is showing me a... This is a program.
From Feldafing.
With her own picture in it, marching, holding a banner, when the policeman was killed.
When a Jewish policeman
when
was
they
killed.
Were demonstrating.
Demonstrating.
It's marked 1946 here.
In 1946. 1945,
1946.
Right. Yeah.
That's great that you have that. Then you decided to come to the United States at home.
Trick or treat! I have to close the door. Everybody was registering, you know, different places. People started to get letters from families from Canada, from Cuba, from the United States, from Argentina. A lot of Jews have immigrated before the war to Argentina. And I knew that I have two uncles here. I didn't know exactly the addresses or anything, but my younger uncle was in the army, and he had looked for me. Not for me, he had looked for somebody.
From the family.
Right. And somebody had told him that they think that I am alive. They had not seen me, but rumors used to go because people were constantly going. This was the thing after the war. You went from city to city, you constantly looked, you looked into the eyes of, up to this day, I constantly look. This is something that I cannot shed, it's something in me. I always look, this one looks like this one, and maybe this one got older. There's something on my mind, maybe. My daughter is now interested in tracing the roots, you know, the roots is now a very big thing. And they had a meeting, and you asked me before about if they are united, the children of the Holocaust survivors. They had a meeting a couple of weeks ago, and they had a guy, I don't know his name, but he's, what do you call a guy that is, they have a special name, the one that go now in and they look for the roots. They had invited him to speak before them.
Right, go ahead.
And he had spoken, and he told them that he himself is not a survivor, he's an American-born person, but they invited him to speak, and he told them how to go about it, how you can find things. And this is when my daughter is now completely, she wants to go as far as she can go.
I hardly blame her.
She wants to, I said, go ahead, we'll see how far we can
Maybe
go.
Maybe through Mia Shireen.
I don't know. She will, he gave them different points. She has it all written down, but he did. He said in the remotest places that you won't even think of looking, people have different documents, cities, magistrates, have documents that are laying around that nobody's interested. He said he had looked for a document once in a cellar that he spent there almost the whole night. He came out looking like he was in a chimney. But he had found.
Tell me how you felt about yourself after it was all over.
Well, after it was all over, I don't think it hit us yet. The impact of it did not hit us at that moment when we were liberated, or for that matter, even when I traveled to my hometown. You still had in the back of your mind that maybe. The impact really hit me when I was already free, in a free country, between free people, being a mother of a child. And this was my most critical time in my life. I used to sit and look at a child and think of what a precious pest I wrapped her. Because if she would have been born to somebody else, she would have had everything that I took away from her. Grandparents, aunts, uncles, places to go.
You didn't take them away, they were taken from you.
But I felt that if she would have been born to somebody else, because she was mine, she will have to struggle through life together with me. And I was not thrilled about life. I still did not know how to go on living. I was existing. I was just pulling through day to day. I was now on my own. I was not surrounded with all my friends anymore. I mean, you cannot be for a lifetime. You move. And we established a life on our own. And you have to mingle with people, with free people. And you have to learn how to do it. And it's very hard. And I think this was my most critical time in my life.
Did you say, you used the word guilt before?
I felt guilty. Very, very guilty.
Because you survived?
But because I survived. In fact, I used to get angry when people said to me how lucky I was. I was not lucky at all. I didn't think I was lucky. I thought that I was punished for being alive. I thought that this is a continuation of the same thing. So I was not in a concentration camp, but I was alone. I was still alone. I had nobody to talk to. I had no family.
You were married then?
I was married. I had a child. My husband went to work. I had a little furnished room. But besides this, I didn't have nothing else. And this is what people could not understand. They thought that just by being alive, I am lucky. But that's not the way I thought.
In other words, it was your family that you missed.
I missed the family. I missed somebody to tell good news, to tell bad news. I didn't have nobody to tell it to. One thing that sticks out in my mind, and this is after I came to the United States, and I probably started going into labor, but I didn't know what it was. Nobody ever told me about it. My aunt was away. She had a hotel, and she used to go away like in April to set it up for the summer or
was
whatever.
Was that in the mountains?
No, she was in Sharon Springs.
All right, go ahead.
And she left me in the house, and there was her son, who was at that time 13 years old, who I can't put in that he is now Supreme Court Justice. And my husband was not back from work yet.
What's his name, by the way?
Melvin Tenenbaum. That was my mother's maiden name, Tannenbaum. And somebody had told him, my husband, about an apartment. And he said that on the way back from work, he's going to stop there to look at the apartment, because he knew the time is nearing that I'm going to have a baby and that we'll have to move out. I mean, I felt uncomfortable. They had a little girl here of 5 years old and the boy of 13, and we kind of didn't, it was kind of crowded. I went into the bedroom and I started, I wasn't feeling good. And I came out and I said to him, I don't feel good. He said, well, what's wrong with you? He was 13 years old, or 13 and a half. I said, I don't know. I didn't know how to tell him that my water bag busted. I didn't know what it was. Nobody ever told me. I didn't know. So he said, you know what? We're going to call my aunt and tell her what happened. And you tell her what happened. Tell her to her. To her in Yiddish, if you don't know how to say it in English. And he called her up, her name was Frida, and he said, Dora wants to talk to you. I said, Frida, something happened. I don't know what happened, but it's wrong, something is wrong. She says, what happened? And I told her. She said, you know what, tell Melvin to call a taxi and go to the hospital. And I will follow as soon as my husband comes from work. She had two small children. I came to the hospital, and my husband didn't know. My husband was looking for an apartment. And obviously I was not ready yet. And I saw girls walking around, everybody getting ready for her time. Now I understand it. At that time, I could not understand it, that she put around my bed
the curtains.
The curtains and also the sides.
Up on the bed.
On the bed. I was only 2 months in this country. I came
so that was four,
in
9 months then at that time.
Well, I came in March, and the baby was born in May 19th. And I could not understand why she's doing it to me when I have to go to the ladies' room constantly. And she said that you don't have to go anymore. And I said that I have to go. I thought, if I could only speak English and explain to her, she wouldn't do it to me. I constantly thought people are doing things to me because they don't understand me. She was doing it because I was probably ready. And she did not want me to go down from bed anymore. But not me. I climbed over the things. And I went anyway. And when I came back, I said, where were you? I said, I went to the ladies' room. That's where I had to go. She said, well, you're not going anymore. This I understood. And then my baby was born. I had a little girl.
I can't tell you how much we appreciate your giving us your story. It's going to mean an awful lot to the archives. It will be used seriously, and for this I thank you very, very much. I want to get a